Redbeard's Outfitter is a Mobile, Alabama-based outfitter offering a carefully curated selection of gear and apparel, outfitting you for your next adventure, exploring our world, and building community. We love this local store, and we love supporting folks like them who are building community in the outdoor space. Plus, they have some spectacular apparel for Alabamians and all the gear anyone would need to be ready to enjoy the outdoors. Use promo code TSO for a 20% discount online or visit them in store. Visit redbeardsoutfitter.com for more information. This is The Storied Outdoors, a podcast somewhere between Lewis and Tolkien and Lewis and Clark, finding clarity in the stories we tell and the adventures that shape us. Welcome to The Storied Outdoors. My name is Brad Hill, and I'm joined, as always, by my good friend Brian Gill, my co-host, my pal. We do this thing together, and we're having a blast meeting people, telling stories, and we're fired up tonight to have a return to the show, but a real episode this time. Captain Robin Sims, Alabama native, mom of two daughters, co-founder of Alabama Women on the Fly, Mayfly Project mentor. Love to hear about some of that maybe in the conversation. A renegade, she says, on the oars. Certified boat captain. I can't wait to hear the story behind that. We met Robin a year ago. I can't believe it's been a year, by the way. We were at the International Fly Fishing Film Festival there in Birmingham supporting the Slam That Saves, the short film by our friend from Dorsal Outdoors and featuring Mary Beth Meeks and Dr. Red Eye himself, Matt Lewis, all of which have joined us for an episode. So, we're excited to have Robin sit down with us for longer. This time it'll be a lot longer, a full conversation. But before, we got a little taste and we saw, there's a lot more under the surface there, a lot more stories to be heard from our friend Robin. And so, we're just honored and thankful to be able to sit down with you for a conversation this evening. Robin, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Brad. Thanks, Brian, for having me. I'm excited to hang out with you tonight.
this has been one we've been looking forward to for so long. And like Brad said, we had a little bit of a taste at the loud community room at Cahaba Brewery. And it was a lot of fun to have that little snippet. I think we got a good bear story, if I'm not mistaken.
You did. Always love a good bear story. And you didn't disappoint.
You delivered.
The tent and the shotgun and
the shotgun and a bear in Alaska. I mean, that checks all the boxes right there.
You can't take Alabama out of the girl. I mean,
that's right. That's
hey, you right. learn a Alabama lot growing native. Up in Valley, Alabama.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, 12 tax years county teaches you a thing or two.
that is so true. So there's a lot of water been under the bridge, no pun intended. since that time, since those that conversation. We were kind of, I feel like we were on the front end of a couple of big things. I think the Alabama Women on the Fly was kind of just getting kicked off. Yeah. I didn't even know that the captain certification was on the horizon. I mean, that was just like a surprise. Hey, look at this, like, ta-da. And then, some of these other opportunities that you've had over the years. So, just in a real quick recap, what's been going on?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the last year I took a giant step back from a lot in terms of my volunteer work. I had to focus on my family and sort of a decision for myself and a career swing. And I decided, I needed to kind of just pivot. I've been in a traditional sort of corporate position for the last 5 going on 6 years and just wasn't really bringing that joy to me. And I was using my volunteer time to kind of fill that void here and there, and then that was taken away for family also at the same time. But so I just decided, I had to find a good balance and So October, I just resigned from my position and it took a leap of faith on that. And my partner Jason and I decided, you know, it's time to do my upgrade to my 100-ton captain's license and let's get that out of the way and get back into boats where my passion is, where my love is. And that was sort of the kickstart of that wild twist of events, I guess.
So you talk about, you know, your occupation bringing this passion and, mm-hmm. and this joy to your life. You know, I work with a lot of people and we talk about this kind of difference between your occupation and your vocation, like mm-hmm. kind of your calling,
mm-hmm.
you know, something that you're uniquely equipped to do, you know, and as a Christian, we talk about if there's a calling, you know, I think Frederick Buechner says that if there's a calling, then there's a caller. And, on a Christian campus, we talk a lot about this being called to do what we do. And, but, you know, that goes to all walks of life. It's not just ministry. It's not just Christian campuses and faculty members, but like talk a little bit about that struggle that you had between this imbalance between occupation and kind of what you felt like was really bringing you joy in life.
Sure. Well, just the last time I talked with you guys, kind of touched on a few things, how I used to raft guide in Colorado and did a lot of traveling and different on-end jobs seasonally. And I did that for, gosh, I guess close to almost 14 years or so. I got to the point in my 30s where I, you know, I was working on rivers and around boats, and then all of a sudden I fell in love with a bunch of sled dogs in Alaska. And that was my first pivot from working on the boats and in water and things like that to a whole new world. That's where I met my ex-husband, and we ran a sled dog kennel for several years. And so I just sort of got drawn away from my true passion into something new. And I loved the lifestyle and things like that, but it led me down a path where I decided, okay, well, you know, by certain cultures, I'm supposed to settle down. I'm supposed to have a family. I'm supposed to get a job in a corporate world, have a 401k, have benefits, and check all those marks, especially in my 30s. All my friends were doing it at that point. Deep down in my heart, I just wanted to run boats still. anyway, we moved back to Alabama in the process of some life changes, and that's when I had my opportunity to get back on boats and start working in the water again. And once I did that, I got back into a taste of it and found my passion again. It was short-lived only because having a child in the industry, a young child, in the industry where you're taken away from your family or your home for sometimes weeks or even a month or so at a time doing salvage work when I was working for Towboat US, took a toll as a mom, and my little girl was only 3 at that time. So I had to take a step back again. And just sort of at that moment, maybe not do what I wanted to, but do what I needed to. And that was get back into a corporate position and have some stability just to sort of balance that out. At that point, I was a single mom and definitely had to focus. And the industry for boating and for maritime transportation, everything, it's not really conducive to a woman in that role with a child so much. So it was just a decision I had to make at that point. But long story short, she's 3. I'm now sort of in more of a stable environment with a life partner that works well together with me. We, you know, now have a 3-year-old together, and he also is a boat captain. And so it's a lot easier to be back into it when you have someone who just supports you 100% for that path. And when I had the opportunity, after I decided that I just could not quite stand to be in a corporate HR position any longer, because I just couldn't find my fire, you know, he 100% supported my change and my shift. And that was sort of the end of that question. I knew exactly what I wanted to do and what I had to do, and we just did a big pivot. So now I'm hoping to be able to use my experience and my captain's license for some things that are coming up on the horizon, potentially with Coosa River Keepers, on the Coosa River, like a floating classroom, things like that.
Wow.
So they'll have a big, probably 30, 40 foot pontoon charter vessel with 30 kids that can come on board and take them up and down the river. So
That is so cool.
that's
So now tell
where I
me,
want to come full circle.
now did you start Riverbird?
I did. So Riverbird was my little guide business that I
Okay.
started doing. And, I did that on the side just to sort of tickle that itch that I still had for adventure while I'm in a corporate position. And I loved it, and I still love it. I don't promote it a ton just because I got way over my head right off the bat. I could not put out the service for the demand, especially with the kids on the weekend and all the different activities I was volunteering for the organizations.
Well, that
But I
speaks highly
actually
of
took
you,
it.
though. You
What's
know,
that?
that speaks really highly of you and the respect people have for you, that you couldn't,
Yeah.
the
I
demand
just
was out, way exceeded
Yeah.
the availability, so.
It surprised me. And I tried to sort of refocus that whole idea to be more of a support system for organizations. So when people were saying, "Hey, do you have anything to donate for a raffle?" I'm like, "Here's a trip. Donate that, because I'd much rather use that skill or that gift and my passion being on the water to bring something to someone else." It's weird to say, and I know Jason, my partner, hates it when I do this, but I would do it free every day just because I love it that much. But in some way or another, it makes sense for it to bring something back to the table somewhere. So I was able to do that, at least for Coosa River Keepers, for a majority of their fundraising at the beginning of the year, and did a little raffle off for that, and that was fun. So I got to do several trips over the summer. We had a blast. I got to meet a lot of people, and unfortunately, I had to turn down several requests. Just didn't match up with my calendar. But I'll have some more openings this summer, and I hope to actually team up with Alex Carter with Float Alabama on some things this summer. So that's sort of on the horizon too, and that'll be some
Awesome.
fun to look
Wow.
forward to.
That's a cool place down there.
It is.
Yeah, so I think he's taking a little bit of a turn too. I don't know if he's gonna have a shop on the highway anymore, but he's gonna have more of a mobile aspect and focus more on just the Tallapoosa, but also the Coosa River as well
Wow.
for rentals and things like that.
Wow. That's cool.
Robin, where did this love for being on the water and boats and you're a captain, but that started somewhere. Where did all
It
that
did.
start for you?
I mean, at a young age, it started just from growing up on, the Chattahoochee River, with my dad fishing, my mom fishing, sometimes together in bass tournaments. And a lot of the time we spent at Lake Martin. We had a tiny little trailer cabin at Lake Martin, sort of the OGs of Lake Martin, over at Pleasure Point Park. And we spent every weekend over there. It was like our little family cabin we all pitched in on, and we just ran the banks of that lake in the Tallapoosa River, and we were just feral, free-ranging children on the water. And by the time I was able to reach the clutch, my dad had me backing up that bass boat trailer down Pleasure Point boat ramp, which was steep. And,
Man,
boat, he'd
ooh.
be pulling it out, and he'd just be like, "Take off." And I'd peel out because I could barely reach a clutch. So I'd slam that gas and take off. And
Sounds like that Alan Jackson song "Drive" was written about you, actually, on the Chattahoochee.
maybe.
Just when Daddy
I was
let me
this tiny
drive.
little kid in this like Chevy truck just trying to get my daddy's bass boat on the water for him.
I love it. That's
There's
hilarious.
a meme floating around. I don't know if you've seen the meme floating around, but it says something like, "Some of y'all never backed a bass boat down a ramp with your daddy yelling at you, and it shows."
And it shows.
It's true.
That's right. Yeah, no what yeah, nobody
Learn some
knows
life
anxiety
lessons, but
like people have done that, right?
yeah, there's no pressure
Or I
like
think the other one I've
that.
seen is like you don't know anxiety until you held the flashlight for your dad while he's trying to
Yeah,
work on something.
definitely.
Man, every time I back my boat in the water, like I'm always like, especially when there's an audience, I'm so nervous. And I drive this old raggedy Jeep Wrangler, and I'm like, man, this thing's going to end up in the water one day.
You got to roll your windows down. Make sure you're ready.
Case. And there's always like an audience, and I'm like, dude, I'm gonna mess this up. Or mainly, I'm good at backing it up. It's getting the boat on the trailer. That's like my boat is so darn flat. I don't have a nice V for it to just slide right up in there.
You don't have that hard V to slide you right on there. It's tricky.
But anyway, I'm always there. And I'm like, oh, here's like 10 guys watching that. Every one of them are judging me. You know?
My favorite, you probably don't get this, but as a woman, when you show up to a boat ramp with a boat and a trailer, first, you do have all eyes on you. But second, there's lovely older gentlemen that come up and like, hey, you need a hand, little lady. I'm like, oh, I got it.
I think you got it, Grandpa.
That's captain.
Most of the time. Yeah, and I appreciate it so much. But my favorite part is when I can help somebody else out.
Yes.
Jackknifing left and right. Oh, yeah. And
things, things looks like a Swiss Army knife under, under duress.
Working for Tobo, I had to do a lot of trailer assist stuff by getting, vessels on trailers that were not running and things like that, and I had lots of opportunity to help out with some of those. And,
serve up some humble pie.
It's as awkward as they want to make it, really. I'm just gonna be a hand if they need it.
That's
I don't have nothing to prove. I don't need them to prove anything to me. It's you're paying by the hour, so
you take as long as you want to, boss.
Yeah.
Robin, we're talking about backing bass boats now, but then you've got a 100-ton captain's license. How did you get there?
Yes. Yeah.
That's so, jump. That's quite the jump from the old bass boat running the the Lake Martin to 100-ton captain's license.
Oh, yeah. Well, my dad unleashed me on Lake Martin when I turned 14 in his boat. So I would just do my thing all around Lake Martin on my own. For years, and then once I ended up kind of parting ways from my family, growing into my adulthood, that's something that just sort of stuck with me through life, is that confidence in water and on the boats, and knowing I could figure out and operate just about any kind of boat, because I've been through so many situations with my dad blowing motors up or whatever else. But once I got to Alaska, I think that was really the next big moment I was able to get back on boats and work commercially on some boats. And I was working with Fish and Game in Alaska, and we were running jet boats on the Susitna River.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a blast. A lot of the guys and some gals that come out on those remote field camps don't really have any boating experience at all. A lot of them are fresh out of school or in the middle of school and that kind of thing. I just happened to be that girl from Alabama that had some experience outdoors and got lucky to jump in that position, because I was on a steelhead project in Washington. So I had no fisheries experience, formal education for it or anything like that. But once I got out there and they realized like, oh shoot, she might know a thing or two, could help us out here in field camp with boats. That's when it really clicked, and I was able to jump in another situation and really just sort of have fun with it. So I ran jet boats for a season on the Susitna, and, it was for about 5-6 months total. And then after that, before that, I was working in Skagway and Haines. Now, I wasn't operating a boat there in terms of a motorized vessel, but we had cruise ship passengers that came into Skagway for our excursion that we offered, and that was part of the guiding that I did in Alaska. And a lot of times, we would have to go pick them up on a high-speed catamaran, which is like a 90-ton catamaran. It was like a triple, double-decker for that one. There's a separate one called the Chilcat Express. That was a triple decker. So it held up to about 150 passengers. But so we would pick them up over in Skagway and then bring them back to Glacier Point or to Haines, to whichever excursion they were. So that's really where I started to accumulate my sea time. And that was the only way I was able to really go for my upgrade from OUPB, my six pack, up to the 100-ton master. Now, since all of that is within the Tracy Arm of Alaska, it's an inside passageway. It's the ocean, but it's very much inside intercoastal water. So I'm not able to get my near coastal. I'm only able to get my inland 100-ton. But that vessel gave me the time I needed to acquire to get that upgrade. And I can eventually, I've never operated a boat that large, but I can eventually work my way up to that now that I have my license and the testing and the exam is complete and everything else for that. But that does give me the opportunity to operate some of the vessels around here on the Alabama River.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's a navigable waterway. And so you have to be, I guess, licensed by the United States Coast Guard when you're operating any kind of inspected vessel. And so that also allows me to operate any excursion that has over 6 passengers. So I believe my cap would be maybe 150 passengers total, depending on the size of the boat. But yeah, but I'm kind of working for that middle. You know, less
a lot of responsibility.
30 people would be my max that I would be comfortable with at the moment.
Yeah, that's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah. So there's so much you can do with that license, and there's more you can go for in the masters. You can do unlimited, and then all of a sudden you're running like large barges and things in coastal and transportation stuff. So, you know, that's the cool thing about it is if you can find an opportunity where someone gives you a shot, you can work your way into it easily.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. There's a whole, you know, the whole business that, you know, I wasn't aware of down here, I live on Mobile Bay. And so, there's a whole business there. Their only purpose in life is to guide the big ships in and out, you know?
Yeah.
That's what they do.
The part of our ski school's in Bayou Battery, Alabama. And they take a lot of people through that course there for the transportation and oil rigs and everything else.
Pretty impressive.
They
had one of those honk at me not too long ago.
Were you in their way?
Well, I was dead in the water.
Oh.
I was dead in the water in my skiff, me and my son, and my trolling motor was the only thing alive. And I was going into the wind and felt like I was on a treadmill, and there's this tanker ship. I mean, ship. Coming at me, and man, one of those pilot boats comes around. He comes wheeling around. He's honking at me. Bang, 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 bang. I'm like, bro, I promise. I'm like,
you needed your little flag. It was a red over red flag.
So, but I was moving, and then I got just out of the way. And I had some guys come up like, hey, do you need us to pull you? I was like, I think I'm okay, but, you know, I may need some new drawers. My son's did we almost die?
I said, well. Those big guys generally have right away most every situation, except when you have no power. But they don't have very much maneuverability out there. Mm-hmm.
Well, there was nowhere for him to go. We were in a very tight spot.
Oh yeah,
but it was a little scary for a second.
You were running a radio or nothing? You couldn't talk to him?
Oh no. No radio. I was like,
you didn't do your arm signals. Flare guns.
Yeah, it was about to come to that, but they saw me, you know, and the pilot boat was coming around. I mean, I would have been
just
fine.
Just get out that big old orange life jacket and put that on, and they'll know exactly what's happening.
Yeah. That was something, but man, that's so awesome. You know, that's so much opportunity for you and just some incredible things on the horizon. You know, that opens up lots of doors, so that's very, very exciting.
It's Robin, really like, it's funny though, we're kind of planning our end game with this whole strategy for retirement. Mm-hmm. Once the kids are out of school, out of the house, Jake and I are going to take off and go do yacht deliveries down the coast.
Hey, that sounds awesome.
Big money. Nobody knows how to run those boats when they buy them. They have to hire some captains to run those big yachts. So
we'll do some yacht deliveries and things like that. Well, that was my next question. So, like, you know, for those of us who don't really know what a 100-ton boat would look like, what is that? Like, give us some visual of the type of boat that we might see that would be something that would be 100 tons.
Okay, yeah. So, like, I'm not sure if you're familiar with like the riverboat downtown Montgomery here that does the big dinner cruise. A boat generally 100 tons is gonna be right around like probably 65 feet or so, and sometimes they can be like triple deckers, and that's the one, that's the vessel that typically holds about 150 passengers. And that's another opportunity around the corner potentially. I can jump on the riverboat down here and just work a few weekends here and there and help them out.
Have you seen the cruise ship that's up and down the Tennessee River?
I have not. No. Is it
There's
like a smaller cruise ship, like the 65 to 100 passenger thing? Like it looks
no,
like a little mini, not really.
the one that we saw was a big one. I mean it all I mean
Really?
it looked like a barge coming down, but it was like had people out eating dinner. I mean we're sitting on the Tennessee River just kind of hanging out and fishing, and
Yeah.
here comes a cruise
You're like,
ship, and I'm
who's
like,
that?
guys, I think that's a cruise ship. And
Carnival's headed to Pigeon Forge? I mean, what are we doing here?
it wasn't quite
Pigeon
Disney Cruise, you know, but it was like one of the old Viking cruises or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
But like it, I was sitting there thinking, I was like, man, that'd be kind of cool. And I checked the price on
Yeah.
it. I was like, I'm good. I don't think I'm not gonna. I don't think I want to be. I think I'm gonna stick with just
I think I'll do a real
the
cruise.
bass boat. Yeah, go to France.
Oh God. Yeah, I don't think I'd want to be on the Tennessee River running a cruise ship with all those barges up and down that river. There's no way.
Yeah,
No way.
no, thank
Yeah,
you.
it's you know it gets pretty tight sometimes.
Yeah.
Even
Yeah.
you know even as wide as it is in places, those barges are three wide and.
Well, you got some crazy curves through that river system too.
Yes.
The
Some
hairpin
hairpins.
turns.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Jason ran towboats up there for years,
Yeah.
and I helped him every now and then. And there's some wild stuff going on up there. A lot of locks and dams to go through around there too.
So you know, I got a couple of follow-up questions just kind of talking about this. What is one of your earliest memories on the water?
Oh, it's funny you asked that. We were just talking about this the other night. When I was little, I used to wake up several times, I remember, like on the floor or in the underneath the little helm of my dad's bass boat. Because he would take off so early. My mom fished with him on a few tournaments, and we were young. I was probably 4 or 5, maybe. And they would take off so early, they just kind of plop us out of bed. You know, we didn't sit in car seats back then, so they just threw us in the truck. Carried us
Those were the
maybe a
good old days.
seatbelt. And you know, like those crazy bass tournaments, they have like the takeoff. Can
Yeah.
you imagine doing that with your kids asleep in the floor of your bass boat? Anyway, I don't remember that part, but I just can imagine my dad gunning it to get to the best spot with his like two kids asleep in the bottom of the boat. But yeah, I remember, you know, waking up in the sunrise in my dad's bass boat. Mom and dad are just, you know, hanging out fishing, and then me and my sister will have a little bag with some toys and hanging out. But oh, and then having to pee off the back of the boat, that was always fun.
That's yep.
But that's pretty
That's
much,
waking
that's
up
my
and seeing a sunrise in a bass boat as a child. I mean,
earliest. Yeah.
that's
And this is
living.
like the 80s, you know, this is like late 80s. So like
Oh
bass boats
yeah.
weren't nice like they are now.
No.
They were
Yeah.
kind of sketchy back
Yeah.
then.
It beat you to death coming out of there. You get a
Yeah.
couple of
Yeah.
waves,
And
you
it
get
was like the
sporty.
verge of like the glitter boat era, you
Yeah.
know? So, I
Oh,
mean, that's
glitter
what my dad
rockets.
wanted to get into for that.
That is too cool.
Yeah.
Oh, glitter rocket. You were in like an aluminum like bass tracker or something, weren't you?
That's what we were
I
in.
do think it was fiberglass. I don't know if it was aluminum. I think it was at least fiberglass, maybe, but I remember that carpet, that
Had that
terrible
old
carpet.
fake like green carpet, like supposed to be
They
like grass or whatever. That
would
stuff was
hold
awful.
sand in it so
Oh
bad
yeah.
too. And you slap those waves and sand just stinging you in the face.
Oh man.
Would have mercy like taking off like full throttle.
That
And
boat,
you know, the I think I
like,
can't remember, we probably had like a one on that thing. Oh yeah, because straight out of the hole.
straight out of the water. I mean,
Can't
the
see
tube.
anywhere.
Now
Can't
for
see
like,
where you're going. No. Until you get on plane. Yeah.
Would not plane out for like at least 20 seconds.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's a great early memory there. That's a great early memory.
And my Uncle Joey, well, he's still up and down the Chattahoochee River in his little like aluminum boat. He's a river king down there. And he catches some of the biggest bass out of the Chattahoochee, especially below Langdale Dam and Crow Hop. And I love seeing him till this day. We'll go out on a float with like the Oars Foundation or Project Healing Waters down the Chattahoochee, and I'm in my raft, you know, rowing people. He cruises up to the first boat he sees. He's like, "Y'all seeing Robin?" River. And here comes Uncle Jody right up to me. He's like, "Ah!" He's like, "Hey, yuck, yuck." That's what he calls me.
Yuck, yuck.
So seeing my family out there is always fun, too. Yeah.
Oh, that is awesome. That's fun.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's living. That's living right there.
So what's your, you know, Brad talked a little bit about a scary story on the water. Have you ever had a close call?
Oh, yeah. We did some really stupid stuff in Alaska. Yeah.
The bear story.
No. This is involving a jet boat.
It's not a jet boat. It's a Zodiac.
No.
You guys know what a Zodiac is?
Yeah.
It's
like an inflatable, rigid hull.
Okay. Yeah.
Like maybe 12, 14 foot boat, like mm-hmm. a little raft with a rigid floor to it. Yeah. And
I think Ben had one of those, Brad.
Okay. Yeah.
So one season I worked out in Alaska, I worked out at this place called Glacier Point. And if you ever get a moment or chance to Google it, it's breathtaking.
I've read about it, but I've never seen a picture of it.
Yeah, the Davidson Glacier is where John Muir wrote a lot of his poetry.
That's where I read about it in his essays, when I read Muir's essays.
Yeah, that's the glacier I lived at the base of, on this fan of land, which was basically just a deglaciated area where the land was rebounding up.
Wow.
Right on the coast from this massive glacier receding off of it. And we were a few miles from the nearest dock to Haines. And so we'd have to take our Zodiac to and from that little inlet to get into the old beater van and drive it into town or over towards the cruise docks where the big boats park. And it was in September, and it was so stormy because September brings a ton of rain and weather in Alaska. And my family is coming to town. So I was like, I got to get back to Skagway because they're coming in on one of the Alaska Marine Highway to Skagway, which is a big like ferry, like a cruise ship, but it's a state run. So mm-hmm. they have rooms and like a cafeteria and things like that. It's very comfortable.
Oh, wow.
Interesting. And you put a car on it and things like that.
Oh, wow.
Because there's no road systems through there. So you have to take the Alaska Marine Highway, which is the ferry, to and from Skagway area.
Amazing.
And so they get up there and they're there for a day. I couldn't get out of there because there was a small boat advisory. We couldn't leave. The high-speed catamaran couldn't beach and let anyone on or off. The waves are just huge. There's probably 4 or 5 foot white caps at that point. Second day, their second Skagway. I'm like, gosh, this is terrible. Like, my family came all the way from Alabama and I can't see him. It's the second day. We try to call in one of our local pilots who's crazy. He's all, get out. He'll come pick us up. He's like, no, I'm not going anywhere.
You know it's bad then, so.
Yeah, so we jump in the Zodiac. At that point, it's big. I don't even know how big the seas were. There's still a small boat advisory out. We had no business being out there in a Zodiac, but we rodeoed our tails across that fjord. And I've never been in the middle of swells this big. And once you crest over a wave and you start dropping
down.
Yeah, it like pushes you fast. And then that wave will break behind you and cavitate behind your motor because it sucks that water out from your motor area, from the propeller. And so you have nothing to grab on to keep your propulsion going.
So
it's kind of a weird ebb and flow, and you got to have the right angle to work a lot of the swells in big water, or it's just going to swamp the boat, especially a Zodiac. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got like, I don't know, 36-inch like high gunnels
Get that. Inside. That's not a gunnel. That ain't a gunnel. That's just.
But we're in our full dry suits with our life jackets on. Like, we're just rodeoing through there. Just, you know, as happy as we could be. Anyway, that was probably the stupidest thing I've ever done. I'm sure the Coast Guard saw us somehow at like a viewing station. I was like, yeah, there's the Chilcat guides coming across the inlet there. We made it. So we made it. And I was so excited. Finally got to Skagway. And I'm surprised they didn't get fired for that. I don't think. Well, actually, one of our managers was the one driving the Zodiac through that. So
all down. You were driving.
And you know what? The fun thing is, her name is Jen Thus. And she's probably one of the most influential people in terms of a role model for me to go after my captain's license. Because that's just the kind of girl she was. She was like, you know, why not? Why not do it? Everyone else can do it. Why can't I do it?
That's and awesome.
Probably against our better judgment on some things. But I trusted her with everything. You know, if she felt like she had a good grip and a good decision on something, I followed her. And, but that was the stupidest thing. High seas, small boat advisory in the Zodiac.
I'd call that a close call, Brian.
I think so. Yeah.
Close call.
Yeah.
Could have died.
You know that thing like my dad drives his bath boat. So I was like, we're in good hands. Full throttle. The worst of it, though, is like a tiller handle style Zodiac. So you don't have like a wheel and a helm. Like
oh,
you're
yeah.
holding your life to this tiller handle, like trying to, you know, work the waves.
Oh, my gosh.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Good man. We made
YOLO.
It.
So there's a lot of hairier things, like scary situations I've been in, but not because I put myself into those situations. It was all with Towboat US being called out to other people. Boats on fire. Boats are sinking. We did a lot of recovery and salvage work down in Corpus Christi, Texas for Hurricane Harvey. So we're raising up sunk boats and sailboats and houseboats and everything else and
that
pulling them off.
Pretty interesting.
Oh yeah, I got tons of pictures I can send you guys of the chaos down there and some of the jobs we did that were just crazy.
That's cool. You know, one of our early episodes on the podcast was with a Bart Valley. He's a good friend of mine who is an in-flight mechanic on the MH-60, and he won a medal. They rescued over 100 people during Harvey. They were flying a helicopter in the middle of that thing.
Oh my gosh!
Pulling people off roofs.
Yeah, it was a mess down there.
It was a wild, wild storm, man.
Yeah, it was scary. And then we went down, you know, several weeks after the storm hit. It was just, it's kind of no man's land. It's dangerous. It's scary, and there's still people out and about and trying to just clean up what they got left. And it's one of those things where you sort of always watch your back. Huh. You don't know who's out and about that maybe shouldn't be there looking for opportunities or whatever else. But
interesting.
It's sad, though.
Yeah, gosh, yeah, it is always sad. Well, we live, you know, right in the shadow of potential of a hurricane, you know, every year where I live in Mobile. So we're always watching. We all become meteorologists. Everybody's watching the weather. We talked about close calls, Robin. What? Is there a time in your life or a particular event that you would point to as sort of a defining moment for you or a turning point for you?
Or
no, just as a person, you know, like you becoming, you know, your confidence or whatever, you know, something you would point to.
I don't know if there's an actual defining moment. I feel like I've lived so many different situations. I've always sort of had this internal voice in my head that tries to talk me through things and chills me out in moments of situations. And I feel like the more you are exposed to different scenarios and situations, the better composure you're going to have overall with things that potentially pop up. And I do feel that my training through Colorado for Whitewater sort of takes that sensation out of me for chaos, right? Like when you're thrown into training, you start becoming a whitewater guide, like you're constantly going through chaos through these rapids, and these people are screaming and some crying, and it's fun to us because we know the risk associated, and we are pretty good at gauging the consequences of what's going to happen if we're going to, you know, hit this hole or hit sideways or go this way, and where these people are going to end up flushing down river. So having that experience or that knowledge sort of desensitizes your fear in a way. And it's also traversed into boating to a point. And I've had a lot of, you know, mess around and find out kind of situations. And honestly, it's not that I don't go into things with fear, but I go into it with respect, hoping that if something happens, it's going to be a learning situation. And then I can apply my skills that I've acquired through the years prior to whatever that may be. And I feel like it's just a building block on that. And I think you can take that for almost any career or activities, and especially high risk activities. And I really do think just putting yourself out there to gain experiences is really just the best method to give you an all around perspective.
I love that point into the chaos of whitewater rafting. I mean, I think that's a beautiful analogy. That's wrought with analogy and metaphor, you know, for life. You know, how many times do you feel like you're, you know, about to be dumped out of a boat and flushed down river, but, you know, you're able to get back on that raft, you know, once things calm down a little bit and get back growing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, luckily, like, you know, in my later ages, I definitely don't take the risk I used to, by choice. But I certainly, you know, I apply it still in every single day of my life, even with my children. And I want them to experience life and the thrill and feel life and not just be completely in a bubble or protected to a certain degree. So I feel like it's applied in so many aspects. It's like a safe way for them to explore and grow as a person, but with a safety net. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So applying all that experience and that knowledge to raising kids has definitely come in handy to, at least for my wild ones.
Yeah, you know, I think that's the, that's, you know, you talk about, you know, we joke about not having seat belts and all that in the 80s and, you know, growing up in the 80s and all that. But, you know, I think that there's so much fear that goes into parenting and sometimes we hold on so tightly that we don't allow our kids to explore and have adventure and have, you know, a longer leash, but also have a safe place to land, you know, and, you know, cause you know, we could insulate our kids so much and then they would not have experienced a whole lot of childhood in some ways.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's going to backfire on me one day. I know it because
they might move out to Alaska.
I put Ruby out in the little John boat we have on our lake that we live on. And she got a little trolling motor by there.
That's awesome.
She'll just drown. She, you know, started doing that at 8 years old. And, you know, she wears a life jacket. And she has a little kill switch for that little trolling motor. But she'll come and dock that little boat with the right angles. And, you know, this little tiller handle, it's hard to get your angles right with those.
Yeah.
It's all opposite.
That's right.
And so her just learning this. The physics of that at such a young age, I think just starts to become like embedded into her muscle memory. And then she's just going to grow upon that. And she rows the raft so well, and she already can, you know, maneuver the raft in different angles and catch eddies and punch through eddy lines and things like that. So those are skills I feel like are going to be applied in so many different ways through life for her. And
they're getting, confidence every time they do it. They're going to have more and more confidence, so you know they're not going to be afraid of water, they're not going to be afraid, they're going to respect it, like you said earlier or something.
I think there's a healthy fear to have, but it's tied closely to respect for the water as well. Yeah, absolutely. So I just know one day she's gonna hightail it out of here and go to Alaska, and I'm gonna be like, "Oh dear God,
A lot of
Jesus, take
prayers.
control." I'll probably go with her. Who knows? But
Brad and I both have daughters, and you have 2 daughters, and just what would be some advice that you would give to parents who have daughters, but you're wanting to get them out into the outdoors?
I know, I feel like my experience with most parents, because I'm a Girl Scout troop leader, so I've got, at the moment 9 little girls who love, for the most part, the outdoors, but a lot of our camping experiences sort of get put on halt because of, not all the parents, but some parents just aren't really keen for sleeping outside in tents kind of thing, where the kids are just gung-ho for it. So my advice to parents would be maybe take a little leap in adventure and sort of put yourself out there too. You might find something that you haven't discovered that you love, like waking up to a sunrise and drinking coffee outside. I mean, there's something to be said in the community that you can build around a fire pit,
Oh,
And I
yeah,
think
man.
a lot of people are disconnected from that these days, especially with their kids. And there's so much creativity and storytelling and connection to be made in those interactions and those opportunities. And so I feel like parents, they gotta go for it,
Yeah, I
take the
think
kids.
that.
If you don't know what you're doing, that's okay.
Well,
Like
that's what I
most
was
of
about to say. How would you how what would you say to a parent that really has no clue where to start? Maybe a single mom like you were at one point. Kind of how do you get into that world? What would you say?
I mean, I don't think you can go wrong just by, I know it sounds silly, but YouTube videos, TikToks, like do your research. Find state parks, safer places, state parks, national parks that have designated camping areas. Park rangers are so friendly and fun and chill. And when they see you as a single mom with a kid coming to do this, like they're gonna be pumped to tell you about all the different activities they have for the night. They have like campfire stories and stuff usually, or different things they put on. So I think finding, first off, your closest area that has either a state park or a national park that can accommodate groups of people where you're going to find or meet like-minded parents that want to be out doing the same thing at the playgrounds, at the park, and things like that. It's a good way and a good step forward. Even if you have to get your Ozark trail tent from Walmart for one night, that's fine.
Hey,
Start small,
a lot of
build
places
into it.
rent gear too,
Yeah,
for
REI rents
really
gear all
cheap.
the time.
Yeah.
I've started traveling now. When we fly into places, I'll just rent gear from REI when we get there instead of fly with it because it just makes sense. It's so much cheaper. And
Woof, yeah.
instead of flying with it, you have to pay extra 50 to 100 bucks for another 50-pound bag of gear.
Yeah.
But yeah, for single parents or any parents, really, like, use your resources in your community. There's so many groups, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts. I tell you, my bridge to the outdoors, besides my family and my experience with my dad and mom and doing all that, was really youth group. That took me on so many adventures. We went rafting on the Ocoee. We went up to, the mountains every year. I went to Camp Simatonga several times, like throughout my young adulthood. And so I do truly feel too, like youth groups are a huge stepping stone for kids to kind of get acquainted with outdoor activities as well. And there's generally camping trips and things like that come in hand, or beach trips even. And
I
I'm sure y'all
find
have some fun youth group stories, I mean.
Let me ask you guys this, because we're all virtually the same age. We find ourselves asking the kids, "Do you want to do this or do you want to do that?" And they're like, "No, I don't really want to do that." And when I think back and look back, my parents didn't ask. They're like, "Hey,
Yeah.
we're going.
Oh, I don't ask either.
You're
I'm like,
coming with."
movies.
You know
We're
how
going on
we got into
our
what we were doing? They said, "Hey, we're going to do this," and I said, "Oh,
Yes.
yes, sir."
Yeah,
It's
absolutely.
very true.
That's what it's turned into with fly fishing with kids now too. Like Ruby kind of her interest goes up and down with fly fishing. And so I'll drag her with me. And I'm like, it's not really a choice, but you're going to sit out and enjoy this beautiful scenery, fresh air. And if you want to come help mom catch a fish, that's great. If not, put your hand up and read your book, you know?
So, was Ruby the one that went with, that you went with to Colorado?
Yes. Yeah.
That looked like a phenomenal trip.
Awesome.
It was amazing. You know, I've come to the point now where I'm tired of stuff. And I can't deal with any more stuff around our house and getting rid of stuff every year. So I've really concentrated Christmas and birthdays on gifting experiences, especially for her age at 10. And that was one experience that she wanted to do, was go see Colorado in the fall. So
well, it was our old pal, Andy Blanks. He says, want to give his kids stories, not stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And I hope one day I can put all that stuff in like a little book for her, you know, like these little books you can make, and maybe she can carry those to her kids one day. And so look how cool, like, of a childhood I had.
I love it. I absolutely love it.
Fantastic.
Y'all had the best time.
We do. Well, it's created a monster, and now she wants to go to Korea and she wants to go to Egypt. And I'm like, pump the brakes. Like,
hey, you got a little Dora the Explorer with you.
Yeah, like mama can only speak Alabama. Like, I don't know if we're going to survive.
Hey, I got you a hookup in Egypt, so you get ready to go.
I would love that. Yeah. She actually has a lot of family in Israel, so we can get somewhat close.
But, in my neighborhood.
Yeah. Yeah, we might let things settle down a little bit before we head over there.
Yeah, how'd you get involved with the Mayfly Project?
Oh, goodness. I think that kind of stemmed from just my connection with like Roel and Jake Vincent and just my whole crew. You know, I really got wrapped into the whole fly fishing community because of those fellas. And
that's awesome.
Just offered my guide service with my raft for Project Healing Waters, which led to the Oars Foundation stuff. And then once that came full circle to the Mayfly Project starting up in Alabama, I was like, sign me up. That's literally where I've had my passions, working with kids. And I love that side of instruction for fly fishing, because I am not a fly fishing instructor whatsoever when it comes to other adults. But with kids, I can connect. And I can start in really elementary terms and ways of making it fun and figuring it out with them.
Yeah.
I think they like that too. They like that it's not some professional person coming straight in to tell them how to do it. But
well, you're like, such an advocate for getting people on the water. I mean, you, if it's not Mayfly or Oars, there's also this whole other arm of Robin that's Alabama Women on the Fly.
Yes. And another part of that too is, I'm not there to teach people how to, but I really am there to help people connect to the resources that taught me. I feel like it's real important for people to take that initiative to really connect with that community when they're learning. And it just, there's no limits. You know, you have people like Rob Rogers and Roel, and I mean, there's just a slew of people in our community that are there to just pump you full of praise and good information, and they just want the best for you. They really want to see you succeed. And being a woman in really a male-dominated sport, Alabama has been the most arms-open, welcoming place to do that. And I don't ever want any woman in the state to feel intimidated walking into like Rob's fly shop, because it's anything but. Whereas if you go to some fly shops out west, there's a little bit of a prestigious sort of air. So really Alabama Women on the Fly is just that effort to bridge a lot of women in the sport, in the state, to these resources. Mm. And it's not just a club just for women kind of thing, but really it's just that effort to connect everybody. Especially if I'm in Alabama.
What's it like to see somebody catch their first fish on the fly?
Oh, it's exhilarating, especially a kid. I tell you, some of these kiddos we work with, it's heartbreaking, really. Just the
not the greatest of home lives and a lot of hard upbringing.
Yeah, and just the simple social interactions are so challenging for them at points. But to see them kind of release that anxiety when they're on the water and they're actually applying the skills they're learning, they kind of lose all that weight. And it's weird because it happens to me too as an adult when I'm on the water and fishing. And I'm sure lots of people can relate to that. That's why we all love it so much. But to watch these children be able to sort of just immerse their whole mind and body and catch a fish. And a lot of times they won't touch the fish, which is okay. But the smile on their face is huge. You know, the relief in their hearts are just surrounded in it. And I think it's creating a moment that's going to be impressionable. And it's one of those moments that really is going to stick. That they're going to draw back to as they get older. And so I think for me, that's what's important is create multiple moments for these children that way. Or even the women in Alabama, Women on the Fly. And a lot of those women have gone through life, you know, same way I did. And to find a passion or a sport. And same with Project Healing Waters, fly fishing. Yeah. A lot of those fellas have gone through some really tough stuff. And to connect in fly fishing and find that balance with that new community of people who encourage them to continue to reach for that feeling, that fish, that pursuit of happiness. But we know. Then along the way you learn it's really about the pursuit and it's less about catching the fish and it's really just about being in the water.
I heard that. Before we know it, Brad Robin's going to be captain / counselor / life coach. All these people she's impacting on the water is just going to be.
I don't know about that.
Your reach is far, far reaching.
I think I just lived a whole bunch of hard life here and there that I can relate to a lot of different people in ways. So
you know, I think sometimes God allows us to go through things so that we can help other people who are going through similar things.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, there's no, I always like to say there's no waste in the kingdom.
Mm-hmm. No.
That, you know, everything that we're going through has purpose, you know, and perhaps it is to encourage someone who's in the midst of that, you know, whatever that may be, that you've gone through something similar and you can go, it's going to be all right. You're going to make it.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, you're going to be able to get through it to put your
arm. My favorite thing is in the midst of those storms to draw from other experiences where I've had so many good, happy moments. It gets you through some of that.
That's right. You know, we're talking about the Mayfly. And the Mayfly Project works with kids that are predominantly in the foster care system. Is that right? Is that correct?
Yep.
I don't think a lot of people really grasp what it takes to end up in the foster care system.
Yeah.
It's if a kid is in that system and in that program, it is really bad. They've been through something terrible. Like 99% of the time, like it is unimaginable what they've been through to put them in that system and in that place. It's not just they had a bad home life. It meant they had a horrific home life to be pulled out of their home. So when you see an organization like the Mayfly working with kids that are in foster care, and to give those kids a put a smile on their face and to give them a moment of release, man, I can't begin to tell you how important that is and how impactful that is for a kid that is in that kind of situation because they have been through things that most people can never imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, man, I appreciate your willingness to take part in that, to come alongside those and enter into that story with them. Man, I love the Mayfly organization. I'm thankful for what they do. That's really, really cool.
Yeah. I inadvertently realized too that it wasn't even just about the fishing and teaching kids how to fish, but most importantly, it was almost a blank slate for these kids to have a healthy adult interaction.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Once, and to sort of explore that ground and how that's supposed to work, setting boundaries in a healthy way and respecting each other. And there's so much that they learn through these interactions with the mentors for the Mayflower Project that it's skills that they take on into their adulthood that maybe they weren't able to pick up somewhere else. Or
yeah.
A lot of these foster families are doing the hard work too, and they Absolutely. Really are, you know, deep into that as well. But sometimes when you take the child out of that foster parent environment with a total stranger, it's like a new experience for them to say, okay, well, what's this person going to do to me? Because all they really know from adult interactions is probably pretty toxic in a lot of ways. And so it's just another chance.
That's good.
To gain trust. Yeah. Good work. And help them rebuild that foundation.
Yeah. Good work. Well, you know, you've mentioned it a couple of times, fly fishing, you know, male dominated, you know, and you're absolutely correct. Most of our guests are men. We do our mm-hmm. best to, get, you know, people like you and Mary Beth and Emily, you know, different ladies to be on the podcast because we don't want it to just be all dudes, and it's not all about hunting and fishing either. We try to mix it up and keep it fresh. We got some cool episodes coming up this season that have nothing to do with hunting and fishing. I'm excited about them. But one thing we have been asking as of late, we've been asking some of our guests, what are good qualities of a man? What's good manhood? There's a lot of toxic manhood, but from you, from your perspective as a lady that interacts with men all the time, I would be fascinated to know, in your opinion, what's good manhood? What's a thought on good manhood and something that you would say, that's a good man there?
Yeah.
The world needs more of that kind of man. How about that?
Yeah.
Let's phrase it that way.
Gosh, it's hard to really pinpoint that just because I am fortunate to know so many golden hearted men and humans, especially in our fly fishing community. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of my ability to be so closely connected to our community and not have any sort of weird vibes or feeling any kind of tension. So I think the biggest aspect to that, the character trait that I find the most admirable, it's really humor. does that make sense in a way? Like to use humor in all aspects. Don't be too serious about yourself.
You know
what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
absolutely.
You never know who you're talking to and what they've done and what accomplishments they've had. And you just take a step back and you don't have to prove anything. Like, just don't be so serious about yourself. And that's one thing I love the most about most of the males in this industry. They're so lighthearted and they're so fun to be around. And if they have a terrible day and they get skunked, they're going to laugh about it and make jokes about themselves. And it's so fun because you feel like, okay, well, maybe that's normal. It's okay that I caught a little shiner on my fly fishing trip to the mountain and didn't catch a trout. You know?
We call them mini tarpons.
Mini tarpons. Mini tarpons. Just baby tarpon.
I think that there's a level of humility that has to come with that, you know, and that trait seems to be allows you to have humor and not take yourself too seriously. I mean, because I've seen the opposite, right? You know, we've all seen the opposite.
Yeah.
People who think a lot of themselves, they let people know it, you know, and it just does not. That's not the kind of person that you want to be around a whole lot. You know, people are kind of drawn to humility and, you know, servant, putting others first, that type of thing. And, you know, and keeping it loose in a lot of ways.
That was one of the,
many more, but that's my biggest.
I like it. I love it. I love that. Thank you for answering that, Robin.
That was a hard one to answer. I was trying to be like pretty, middle ground on that.
Oh, that was great.
That's good.
Don't have stinky armpits. You know what I mean?
Like, don't have stinky armpits. Where do you
have to go? It's okay.
Fellas.
You're in the wood, you're fishing. Yeah.
Now, you know, that makes me think about, I don't know how many folks have watched the Chosen series, you know, that put out by Angel Studios, but, you know, it's a series about, you know, the life of Jesus, and it's really well done. If you haven't watched it, I think it's really creative and very well mm-hmm. done, but they portray Jesus in just the most, it's the first time I've seen a cinematic Jesus that I thought, oh man, there's a Jesus I want to hang out with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Was he like super chill, laid back?
Well, he's just a dude. It's like he's a dude. He's not like so, you know. They're not trying to make him so much like God that he's not man,
mm-hmm. right?
But they're not trying to make it. Yeah, no, but he's. But there are several times throughout it where he has humor, where he jokes around, and he laughs. And you know, there's a scene. You know, he's in. Kind of in a wilderness area, and he's camped out on the edge of town. This is before, you know, he enters into his ministry or what have you, and he's camped out there, and these kids find him, and he's laughing and making fart noises with these kids, and I'm like, man, I bet that's exactly how Jesus would be. It would just be fun to be
totally
around.
He
would be a lot of fun to be around. He would make fun of, you know, one of the disciples is dancing, you know, like, like they were joking around. And like, I think that is a great quality to bring a lightheartedness. You want to talk about somebody that didn't take himself too seriously. I mean, we're talking about the guy that's fully man and fully God. He took off the throne and put on flesh and became obedient to death and looked at the throne and said, that's not something that I really want. I'm not. Like, I don't need that. Like, he was full of humility and funny. I think he was funny. I bet he was funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
that's cool.
I like that inequality. Yeah, that's good.
I think it leads to all other ways of being approachable, too, for all kinds of people, you know? You're not going to turn anyone off when you're smiling and having a good time, you know? You're going to draw people to you, and luckily... most of the people in our community are that way, so we all are so tight knit that we have a good time together always.
You know, there's so much in the world that's negative just bad, you know. People don't need to add to that. It's this, you know, be somebody that other people are feel like they feel better about themselves when you're around them, you know, and just kind of pull the best out of other people, and I think that you do that. And I think that there's a lot of people in this fly fishing community in Alabama that do that as well. I mean, you know, there's a dozen or more names come to my head right now.
That's good.
Well, Robin, one thing that we like to ask our guests is, what is your next adventure?
Gosh. Let's see. As far as fly fishing goes?
Anything.
Okay.
Could going be to a Egypt, swim going to Egypt.
Swim meet in Pensacola or Egypt. Or
I got a calendar full of stuff. So I am heading down to Apalachicola.
Okay.
In April. And I'm doing a birthday trip with Mary Beth and Justin Overton and Sarah Knight. We are gonna rent a houseboat.
Trouble. That is the
fun. Are you fishing? Are you going to fish down there?
We are fishing. There is a female guide, and she was in the film with Mary Beth.
The Triple Tail.
Mm-hmm.
Forgive me, I forget her name, but phenomenal woman captain also. Mm-hmm. And she operates two different skiffs down there, and she takes people out. So Mary Beth and I are going to go out one day, and then Mary Beth and Sarah are going to go out the other day. While they're out, I'm going to head over to Cape San Blas or St. George Island somewhere and do some surf fishing. And I'm probably going to bring my raft, too, because it's got my little, like, 2.5 kicker motor on it. We'll park that right on the houseboat. So if you see a bunch of girls zooming around on a little raft in and out of those fishing, like, trawler boats, that's going to be us.
Is it Danielle Davidson?
What's that? Daniel Davidson.
Daniel Davidson, yep.
Right. Thank you. Yes. And so we're really
tarpon?
Excited.
I mean.
Oh, yeah. She.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
More than just Triple Tail.
Yeah, because Apalachicola, I mean, that's a place that I hear people to fish for tarpon.
Yeah. Oh, I'm gonna tear up some oysters. I cannot wait.
Yeah, man, that's one of my favorite things to eat in the whole world.
My favorite place for sure.
Well, that sounds like a phenomenal trip.
Yes. I mean,
goodness gracious, that may be a
birthday worthy.
That may be a follow up, Brad. We might get all four of those ladies on the show at one time. We're still trying to get Sarah on the show. She's been very against it.
We might have to just kind of do a little impromptu Zoom meeting with you while we're there
from the pontoon.
All of the women together.
Please, let's make that happen. I think, hey, let's put a poll up, see if we want our listeners to want that to happen.
Yeah. We're going to be like my parents. We ain't no poll. We're just going to do it.
Just do it.
Very best meets Sarah Knight, Justin Overton. Justin did the fly fish a ton. Like, she's just kind of like, yeah, she has. She knows how to. It's just, you know, her passion is in protecting rivers.
She's a rock star. I mean, she just really earned some award for the, you know, Southeast or something just last week, I believe.
Oh, man. Cool.
Like award after award, and she deserves it. Like, she, that woman busts her tail day and night. And going head to head with some big people in legislation and everything else.
Yeah.
And really putting herself out there.
That's great. I'm thankful for it.
You know, I talk about a lot of the fellows that I'm so fortunate to know in our industry or our community. And, you know, I failed to mention all the amazing women that is like a huge support system for each other and everything we do. And those are Mary Beth and Sarah Knight and Justin are three of the big ones. So I've been really lucky to have them as close friends.
Absolutely. Well, that sounds like an incredible trip for sure.
It'll be pretty good.
That will be fun. And
so later on in the season, there is a volunteer opportunity open for all kids fish over in Georgia. They have their fall session up around the Upper Chattahoochee, I guess around the Helen, Georgia area.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm hoping to try to coordinate if you want to volunteer as a woman who happens to be in Alabama that likes fly fishing and come with us to get together and get a house on the Tacoma River again. So we'll make it a big old event that way too for the fall.
Man, that sounds fascinating.
2 or 3 days fly fishing like the Tacoma or like the Upper Chattahoochee, and then one day we'll volunteer with the All Kids Fish event.
Cool. Very cool.
That's another big event for the year. We'll see you in Japan.
We'll be sure to keep an eye out for that one and promote it, help promote it from our side of the house and awesome. Maybe point some people your way.
That's awesome. Well, Robin, this has been a great conversation. Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to join us and share your life and your story with us. And man, we're just thankful for it. Appreciate you.
Thank you, guys. I always have fun with you guys. It's always so fun. I could keep going all night.
I know. This would.
We need a campfire next time. A little virtual campfire.
Oh, man.
That's screens. Hey, no, April's coming.
There's nothing better.
Yeah, y'all come on down to Apalachicola. Like, just show up.
Oh, that would be hilarious.
We'll take you out on the raft with us. We'll all pile in there.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah. Well, what a great, man, just a lot of good things to think about, you know, from this conversation. I really appreciate your tenacity and your willingness to put yourself out there to try hard things. You've accomplished a lot, and man, you're an inspiration for a lot of ladies. And, you know, I don't know if my daughter, who's 14, you know, is probably listens to dad's podcast, but maybe she will one day, and she'll hear Robin Sims' story and be inspired by you. Like, you inspire lots of ladies around you and young women around you, including your own daughters. But man, I really appreciate that. And I think we could all use a good taste of humbleness and humility as we interact with others. It's not just a good quality of a good man, but it's the quality of a good human to not take ourselves too seriously. Right.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
Man. So that's so good. I hope these, it certainly inspired me, you know, just as I parent my children, in the outdoors, these stories encourage us and, me and Brian, but they'll encourage many who listen. We're thankful to all those that do listen, man. We've had a lot of people that tune in and listen, and we're so thankful for each one that does. And many of you have left reviews. If you want to help the show out, you leave us a written review on iTunes, especially. You can leave us a review on Spotify, but written reviews on iTunes are a huge help. And if you like YouTube and you watch YouTube, this will also be loaded up on YouTube so you can follow along and watch the video on YouTube as well. And you can leave us a comment, interact with us there. But if you want to share any thoughts with us, you can email us at thestoriedoutdoors.com. And we'll have some pictures from Robin. I'd love it if you share some of your, you know, some of your pictures maybe from Alaska. And some of the pictures you took on that trip to that we were talking about earlier, Colorado, were beautiful pictures, and share some of those. We'll have a website. We'll have a web page devoted to this episode, and we can highlight some of those photos on that website. And so you can always find out more about what's going on with The Storied Outdoors at www.thestoriedoutdoors.com. But so long, man. We just hope this encourages you, challenges you to write your own stories and share your own adventures in the place we love to call The Storied Outdoors.
Redbeard's Outfitter is a Mobile, Alabama-based outfitter offering a carefully curated selection of gear and apparel, outfitting you for your next adventure, exploring our world, and building community. We love this local store, and we love supporting folks like them who are building community in the outdoor space. Plus, they have some spectacular apparel for Alabamians and all the gear anyone would need to be ready to enjoy the outdoors. Use promo code TSO for a 20% discount online or visit them in store. Visit RedbeardsOutfitter.com for more information.